Halo ketawan Tokyo, here come the Pacific Waves from RNZ Pacific, Miko Roy Hawkins. Coming up, protesters take to the streets in Solomon Islands. With tourism jobs all but dried up, more Cook Islanders are moving to New Zealand.
A lot of people from the Cook Islands have sort of left and ventured out towards New Zealand to do fruit picking, meat works and some construction works.
And
which has taken away any ability of the islanders to control and plan for the future.
Norfolk Island's economist says open immigration with Australia is destructive for the island. A police station and several shops were set on fire by looters on Wednesday in Solomon Islands after what started in the morning as a peaceful protest turned ugly around mid-afternoon. Videos on social media show police firing tear gas to disperse looters and buildings set on fire. RNZ Pacific's correspondent in the capital, Honiara, Georgina Kekea, was in the Kukum area where the police station and shops were set alight and says police she spoke to there were not expecting the large crowds which had been at the other end of town to attack the police station. She joins me now. Kia ora, Gina. So what are you seeing?
Yes, thank you, Corey. I think from central Honiara where things started, now the crowd has moved to the eastern side of Honiara, where they've gained momentum and also, you know, gained support as well. I'm just here at the Kukum Traffic Police Station. It was burnt down, and quite a sad sight for us in Honiara at this time. And I've spoken to a police officer there. She said that they weren't aware that there was a big crowd heading towards the eastern side, and it caught them by surprise when they started hearing the protesters shouting outside and started shooting stones at the building. So when they came out, and then they just saw all the protesters there, and they had to run into a room and hide. There were about 10 of them. And they were in the room when they started breathing in smoke, and they realized that the building has been burnt. So they came out, and yeah, the building is burnt down. And I've spoken to the Premier of Malaita. He said that this came about because the national leaders have not really listened to the people of Malaita. The people were expecting that they go down and iron out the differences or even taking the lead in resolving the issues that they are faced with, but they have not. So that's what's happening now. And he said that there's nothing much he can do about the situation, especially he's in Aokie. And there's nothing much you can do about what the people have been doing because it's all out of control now. So what he advised the government is that they should have listened to the people and try to resolve the issues rather than being ignorant of what the people are saying. So that's what I have. There's a press conference and the police has been calling for calm. It's happening this afternoon. And there were also stories that some more group are expected to arrive, but we're not so sure about that, but that's what's been alleged, especially coming from Malaita. And I asked the question, which I hope they will answer, if the police really have the capacity to control the situation that's happening in Honiara, because currently another building from a locally owned Chinese person also has been burned.
Yes. I'm looking at the footage now as we're talking. Someone's got a live social media video on the building you're talking about. In the past, with protests, usually opportunists take over or take over the protest and turn it into a looting. And because they were in front of Parliament when we first talked, right? And then things started to get out of hand. The turning to looting shops, is that usually the same group of protesters as are calling for change and things, or is there also a criminal element, I guess, to this kind of behaviour?
I think it's just basically criminal events. I think that they've tried Chinatown, but you know the people there are now more alert about this thing, so you know they've really put up secure walls and all that, so they cannot get through.
They built fortresses, didn't they?
Yes. And what the police officer said was that most of those that were doing this kind of criminal activities are mainly minutes, basically, just young youths.
Yes, because I do see like the looting and the people in the shops are sort of separate from crowds that are standing around just watching police trying to disperse them. So there's quite a large group of people on the roads that I can see here, but only a few people sort of involved in the actual looting and burning and stuff.
Yeah, and it makes us wonder why they, is that all that we can do? Like, I think they do not want to aggravate the situation, or those ones that got burned are the ones that sacrificed, you know, their businesses for the majority, or I don't know what could be happening, because the police are just, they do not really want to do anything at this point in time. Maybe they do not want to aggravate the situation, or who knows what their plans are.
Minaka Gina, the original protest at Parliament was led by citizens from Malaita province who are voicing their frustrations in the national government and calling for the Prime Minister, Manasseh Songovaire, to step down. At the time this program was recorded, this was a developing story. For the latest, please head over to our website, rnzi.com. More Cook Islanders have arrived in New Zealand, leaving family in exchange for financial stability and a new adventure. Jobs have dried up in Rarotonga due to the lack of tourism, and many within the industry are having to pivot careers after being made redundant. Now just under 30 new recruits have arrived in Southland to try their hand at a meatworks plant. Our reporter Alicia Foon and videographer Nate McKinnon went to Southland to meet them.
At the heart of Southland Matoda lies the Alliance Meat Processing Plant. It's cold and noisy, with beef carcasses hanging from hooks ready to be cut, boned, then packaged for supermarket shelves worldwide. Earlier this month, 27 men and women from the Cook Islands travelled to the South Island to work here. For now, they've committed to a six-month contract to help make ends meet. Husband and wife duo Sinsemelia Joseph and Danny Rayner, known as Mum and Dad of the group, were made redundant from their jobs earlier this year.
We're not only here as individuals, we're here as basically a representative of the Cook Islands as a whole, whether you're from Raro, Atu, Manihiki, etc. I mean, there's 15 islands that we've all just scattered from. We're just one big tight-knit family. So not only do we represent the Cook Islands as a whole, as I mentioned, but we also now represent Alliance. So we try and stay together and stay out of trouble together.
They've left two children back at home, whilst their eldest son goes to school in Auckland. But they say it's a worthy sacrifice in order to financially support extended family.
A lot of people from the Cook Islands have sort of left and ventured out towards New Zealand to do fruit picking, meat works and some construction works, just due to not enough income down in the islands.
Edmund Okiro says they've created a pocket of the Cook Islands within Invercargill. The only difference being the freezing temperatures, but it's something he's learned to appreciate.
Being down here, down south, especially around from Invercargill to Matoura, is like being like home. It's not busy as Auckland. So it's just, like you'll get along with people in the community and they'll come talk to you, and then, you see them on the road, just wave back. it's good. Everyone just going to buy a heater for the room and just keep their heater on and just work from work in the car back home in the heater for a while, and then out to gym and or rugby training. Yeah, it was too cold, but love the cold.
The 27 new recruits have been split into two plants, in Matoda and Owamaru. The group at Matoda are staying at St. Peter's Boarding School in Gore.
Get on now, back into our house. Come on in.
There's a communal lounge, kitchen, gym, and shared bedrooms with up to four single beds per room. It's the first time leaving the island for new recruit Scat Short, whose job was to take tourists on boat rides with Captain Tama's Lagoon Cruises.
Yeah, it is good to have all our Cook Island peoples coming down here to the South Island, to Invercargill, all here to experience the lifestyle working and to work harder. Like, I know that's what they're here for, to work hard.
He's not the only staff member from Captain Tama's Lagoon Cruises. Its manager, Antonia Poa, followed Skat and some of the other crew to work in Aotearoa. She grew up in Huntly, New Zealand, before moving to the islands and says it was time for an adventure.
Girls can do anything the boys can do, sometimes a little bit better. And so I asked if I could come, and I video called Tere, which is our boss at Alliance, and asked if we could come over, and he said yes, and here I am, a meat worker in Invercargill.
But the purpose of her trip quickly changed.
My son got COVID. He's in Melbourne. And for me to get back, I needed to get some money. So being here, I'll be able to save some money. And I haven't seen him for 2 years because the world's been locked down. I'm missing him immensely.
Matoda Plant Production Manager Tere Nu has a deep connection to the Cook Islands.
My father originally came over in the 80s and a recruit to the meat plants down on Ocean Beach. We were short of labour a few years ago. I said, hey, look, why don't we go back to the Cook Islands, and they're New Zealand citizens. We can recruit over there. They'd love to come over and work. Hard workers, pick up the jobs quite easy, English speaking. So it was a no-brainer, really. And it's just increased year in, year out.
Although some new recruits have decided to stay on for another year, since Amelia Joseph and Danny Dana will be travelling back to the Cook Islands when the bubble opens up to New Zealand on January 14th.
Yeah. Just to feel the heat and the sand in my toes will be beautiful.
Yeah, it'll be really good.
And to finally hug my children after so long, I can't wait. Yeah, sorry, get emotional when I talk about them. But yes.
A Norfolk Island writer is accusing the Australian government of imposing what he calls zombie policies on the island. Economist Chris Nobbs says these policies are aimed at making the island the same as the rest of Australia. He says there's a lack of forethought and it's undermining the island's unique culture. Dr. Nobbs has just launched his third book detailing the faults in the Australian takeover in 2016. It's called Australia's Assault on Norfolk Island 2019-2020. Don Wiseman asked him about one of his key concerns.
One of the major problems for Norfolk Island now is that there is open immigration from Australia to Norfolk, which has taken away any ability of the islanders to control and plan for the future. There are problems with biosecurity, there are problems with the loss of culture as well.
In terms of immigration, what's happened? I mean, has the population of Norfolk Island suddenly exploded?
What has happened is this, that if you compare Norfolk Island to almost any other small isolated island in the Pacific or the Atlantic to which it would be reasonable to make a comparison, they all have immigration policies similar to that which Norfolk Island had before the Australian takeover. Now it's a completely open to Australians. There's actually no way of telling who's on the island, how many people are on the island, who owns what properties and what they're doing with it. It's become almost a free market, and I think that's got a long way to play out. There are things like the problems that it's made for the housing market, and there is the back of that issue of the loss of the qualities that a small isolated island have, and they're being replaced by what one might consider to be less thoughtful metropolitan value.
The islanders do have a unique history, and that's well established. Do the islanders feel that by all these people who have not associated with the island suddenly coming to live there, that they are being, that their culture is being overtaken in a way, overwhelmed?
That's certainly true, certainly true. One of the problems is that Australians coming here, even those who come with open minds, are not necessarily aware of the mores of small societies. And there's a great feeling of loss of community values.
Just to recap, what sort of numbers have arrived since or over the last few years? I mean, how has the population changed? It used to be about 1,800. I know it's higher than that now.
We won't know that until we get the results of the Australian census, which happened in September this year.
But there is clearly a sense that there are several hundred more people on the island than there were.
Yes, I wouldn't be able to give you a number on that, but you can't buy a house, almost can't buy a house on Norfolk Island. You can't rent one either because they're all filled up with new settlers, new arrivals.
I guess that might be seen as a negative in some respects, but one of the big concerns has been the stuttering economy, and having more people there surely helps that process.
Yes. I don't think anybody on Norfolk is against immigration as such, but there's a sense in which there's been a complete loss of control, so that there's no way of getting appropriate people with appropriate skills or in terms of the numbers or whatever. I think that's the worry, and I think that the experience of other small isolated islands around the world with regard to the way they control immigration is a strong verification of that fact.
I guess it's unlikely that Australia is about to change the direction it's been going in, so how are you going to change this? What can you do about it?
Yes, well, that's an issue. I think the fundamental matter is whether the Commonwealth government actually cares about what happens to Norfolk Island or whether it doesn't. If it does, then I think we on Norfolk just have to continue to fight our corner, put up to them the issues that we think are important and demand change. Because I think the arguments which are now becoming clear are very rational arguments. They're very sensible arguments. And particularly as we come into an era of climate change, I think they're really sensible.
That brings us to the end of Pacific Waves for today. Remember, you can download us free to your device from Spotify, iHeart or Apple Podcasts. And if you're using Apple, please leave us a rating so others can also find us. Looking for luck next time more.